wake up in your face on the bedroom carpet. Count back all the ways that you ended up there. Can't remember someone else's story. You can't remember that you don't feel sorry. So get up, get out. Lines are gone with the green, you're leaving.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. Time to say, you know what? I'm not going to do the "you can leave this in, I don't care." I'm done with like "welcome under my host." Like, it's just okay. Weird.
Yeah.
It's like an uncomfortable thing. I don't know what I'm supposed to say though, but I guess everyone.
What up, bitches?
Exactly. So joining us today, I guess I'll go through everybody before we start talking about anything else. Sam Cruz, Against the Grain founder, El Guapo, our old friend, and one of my former columnists from Kraft, which I hope to get back one day when he's not quite so busy. Adam Spiegel is with us. Adam is the founder, owner, head distiller. I'm hoping I'm getting all these correct, at Sonoma County Distilling Company. And then Aaron Campos is the director of coffee, which you'll have to explain exactly what that means.
Yes.
At Dark Matter in Chicago, Illinois. So, hey, hi guys. Oh, and by the way, this is super important. Happy National Scrapple Day.
Oh.
Does anybody?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Every show we do, I'm going to announce, like, if I see one more, like, it's National Blubba Day.
Well, you know what yesterday was? National Learn How to Homebrew Day.
Yeah.
Okay, so some of them are fun, but it's like, and I guess like right when you're in coffee and you're in distilling, you're like, oh, it's rye day, it's whiskey day, these are great. But like after a while, do you just not, if it doesn't apply to your business, are you like, are you fucking kidding me? Another national holiday?
Yeah, but Nacho Day was last week too.
IPA day is every day, from what I understand.
Exactly.
That sounds about right, yeah.
So wait, and also I guess for anybody who doesn't know, because I had to look this up after I saw this like 10 times today. Scrapple is a mix of pork scraps, cornmeal, spices heated and poured into loaves and sliced and fried or baked for serving. Nothing sounds worse. And you're shaking your head like it's good. This
bacon good, pork scrap
good. I stopped listening to pork.
Is it amazing? I don't mind pork.
It's a very, no. It's very salty and rainy, and when you're hungover, it's amazing, but otherwise, it should not be, you know, fit for human consumption.
Perfect.
Can we call that spam?
It doesn't, maybe the way they describe it, I always think of spam as,
so when you're willing to eat anything within reach, it's good.
Which is like hangover food, right? Yeah. So you'll make it for us, Brian, to convince us
we
that we don't know.
Scrapple. We could do like some high-end scrapple next week. Some heirloom corn.
Now we're talking. We can smoke that with a little bit of cherry wood. We got ourselves a deal here.
So you guys, we have to, of course, like everybody that listens to the show knows Sam, and there's a lot of stuff to talk about with Sam because, you know, he's had a lot going on at Against the Grain. But our listeners have not heard from Dark Matter Coffee before, and they've not heard from Adam. And I was telling the guys before we started to record, it was very cute because you were one of the people that I heard from after I stopped recording that you would like to do a show, that you're a fan of the show and you listen to the show. And I kept thinking, there's no way I'm ever recording the show again. Sure, Adam, you'll be one of the first people. Yeah, it was more as much as a surprise to anybody else that I started recording again with the guys. But yeah, so it's kind of cool. I didn't do the first one with you because I knew we were going to be so rusty. It would have been weird. It was kind of even weird having Kenji on, like trying to like shake off like the weirdness of not recording for so long. Mm-hmm. But I figured we'd have, yeah, it was weird. Last week it was like, I was lucid. And when I say I was lucid, I was just sober because I didn't finish a sentence. I feel like I don't finish sentences a lot. I think that's my ADD. I think I finish conversations in my head and think that I'm saying it out loud. And you don't really, do you guys ever do that? And you really notice it when you record because you're like, wait, I didn't even finish what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're wondering, did I say that or did I think that? What should the tune
do? And I should not even be admitting this on a show because everybody I've ever dated that has said, you never said that. And I'm like, what are you talking
about? Now I know what my wife's doing when she's like, busting my balls for, you know. Like, no, no, no. You just thought that. You never said it out loud.
No, no, don't put my shit on your wife.
I'm worse. I start, like, the conversations right in the middle. I'm like, so what do you think about that?
Right, catch.
That's... Like, what? What are you talking about?
Nina can join her. Tell me what we're talking about, please.
You hope, like, somewhere in there, like, yeah, because the other person is probably thinking, I wasn't paying attention, right? Did you right? But when when you're recording, you can't hide behind any of that stuff. So
I could dub back in like your voice as to what you were gonna, you know, see how
you
that
better
goes.
Be careful. I may have you editing like crazy.
So, be like the old kung fu movies where you dub in the.
All right, Adam, give us the elevator cell on your cup. No, I'm just kidding. So, do you want to like just tell people about what you're doing in Sonoma? Of course, we are drinking. There's two things that we're going to be drinking of yours tonight. So, we're drinking your West of Kentucky bourbon whiskey, which is he calls his California bourbon.
Nice.
And then I have kind of, I guess, like the first. Exactly. So you have, so you know that Sam from Against the Grain is in Louisville, Kentucky. So he's like, what? And then we've got Sonoma Rye, which is like, it's, this is the first one that you released, right? The first spirit you guys came out with?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, a little bit about us, we'll do the quote unquote elevator pitch, but we are a grain-to-glass distillery based just north of San Francisco by about 45 minutes on the 101. So our kind of task in life is to make whiskey kind of an old-fashioned way. We use direct-fired stills, use direct-fired mash tuns. We do grain-in fermentations. We do open-top fermentations. So we get kind of geeky here, but the real thing is flavor. You know, I'm hunting the flavor, and you know, a lot of times people will try our spirits, and I hope you, as you're enjoying it, Corey, I hope you see it too. But, you know, the reality is that you're sitting there and you're kind of chewing on it and you're enjoying the experience. And, you know, I feel like that's something that's been lost by a lot of new kind of modern age distilleries. I feel like a lot of people are making stuff with really, really, really short finishes that are maybe just meant to taste like some sort of big guy stuff so that they can throw as much corn into and call a day. And, you know, we're just kind of taking a different approach, and, you know, and until I'm broken on the street and someone tells me I failed, you know, the reality is I'm just going to continue to try and kind of go, quote unquote, against the grain as much as I want.
Nice.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Adam, what were you doing before you got into distilling? Like what?
So 2008, I was kind of, one of the victims of the 2008 financial crisis. So I was working in finance at the time. Started distilling in 2008. Met up with my now former business partner, and we started the business in 2010. 2011, we sold our first bottle. So we're actually the 15th distillery in California post-prohibition. And we're talking full-fledged distilleries, not necessarily brandy or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's about 60 of them. So somehow a 31-year-old became kind of the resident old-timer, but, you know, been distilling since I was 24. It's been real fun, and we really feel like we got kind of the wind at our backs at this time, and we're moving forward in a really fun way.
Nice. Yeah, I was going to say, but, you know, 5 years in, you probably are finally getting up on your feet pretty well and looking pretty good, huh?
Well, and he's, you know.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Well, distilling, it's sometimes we forget the time frame that distilling is on as opposed to
like
what Sam's doing. Oh, however, but he is in wine country, which there's even, you know, depending on, you know, how long did you guys hold? Were you guys sourcing in the very beginning, or did you distill your own from out of the gate and hold on to it for a couple of years? How did you do that?
Yeah, so we started distilling from day one, and we've never sourced a barrel in my life. The real reason there, and I certainly don't have any faults with those who do. I think there's a number of very, very talented blenders out there.
Yeah.
But you know, the reality is I'd rather make a product and release it, quote unquote, young, then release a product that I didn't make, that I have no idea what's in it, where the grains come from, had no ability to affect the flavors from day one to ensure that it was some of the best spirit I could have done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the real fun part is, you know, the drinkers to a certain extent are also growing with us too. You know, we're, you know, every single bottle is batch number, bottle numbered. So, you know, I've got people who've come back and been like, yeah, I know I bought it a year ago and, you know, it tasted pretty raw back then. And this stuff is just really flavorful. And you can just kind of taste the progression of the distillery, which, you know, I've really found to be kind of the most fun part about distilling is that it's such a time capsule in time about, you know, the surroundings of what happened during the barrel aging and the fermentation and how you cut the stills. And, you know, that sort of history is a time capsule. The second that cork goes on and we wax seal every single top, you know, that's it.
By the way, thank you for putting those little pull things. Every time I open one of his bottles, I'm so glad they put the little pull things on because you're not like with the knife. I don't know what that drives me. Yeah, it's always nice because it just like you just click. Yeah, I don't know why those. It's very small, weird little things that you're like, oh, this is so nice.
It's funny because we try and do everything. You know, this is, again, kind of my big giant R&D project. And you know, now 5 years in, I mean, you know, those little tallies came about as actually a functional thing. You know, not just to open the bottles, but physically to dunk the bottles in the wax. I mean, we use those as an anchor to hold on to the bottle. And so then all of a sudden it kind of became like these little tiny bow ties and ties and neckties. And people were like, oh, those are kind of cute. And I'm like, sure. they're effing adorable. It's become kind of the signature of the product. And, you know, as much as we're now scaling up and, you know, my guys are kind of looking at me like, oh, crap, we're going to have to do almost twice as much next year. Great. But.
Yeah, because that's something that will always have to be done by hand. I mean, not the labeling if you're going to dip them, it's... I guess there's probably equipment, but I even think makers, I mean, do they, I've never done a show with makers, but I think they do it by hand.
I don't know either.
I don't either. Sam could tell us.
Some of it is by hand.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Some of it is by hand. I mean, if you see the videos, they'll certainly tell you that it's done by hand, but.
There's like a Willy Wonka contraption that's running through that factory.
Exactly. The amount of drugs needed to keep someone up that long to wax that many bottles has not yet been invented in time.
I love it. And of course, I know you're working towards it because it's a conversation I had with you, and it's something that we brought up with the guys on the last show that I want to keep bringing up with people. You are sourcing some of your stuff locally, right? But you're working, and when I say, and I guess I... this was one of those moments where I didn't complete my sentence, and I think people know what I'm talking about. When I say that, I mean the raw ingredients that they're working with, meaning if I'm talking to Sam, sourcing locally, if you're talking about fruit, or if I'm talking about grains, or if I'm talking like whatever. Obviously, Aaron's not sourcing coffee beans locally, but I you know, we're really trying to talk more about farmers and people working with and supporting farmers, and I know it's something you said that you're working towards doing exclusively,
absolutely. So I mean, there's a couple pieces to that. I mean, if it was up to me, I would source everything locally. The problem, of course, is that California farmers, not just because we got absolutely no water, but because of the fact that they just haven't really seen that there's a financial benefit to growing grain in California. You know, the land is too valuable, and wine grapes will yield you a lot more money. So I mean, in our area in particular, people just don't grow grains. But having said that, now there's been this impetus to kind of change things. And so us and the big breweries of the world are finally starting to convince them to do this stuff. And then the next barrier of entry we have is that there's no malteries in the state of California as of today. So, you know, for us to be able to utilize grains, we're utilizing them raw, which means we need to have the right type of equipment. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's been part of it. But, yeah, I'm absolutely all about it. I mean, ideally, even starting next month, we're starting to slowly integrate California-grown organic grains. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just going to further our terroir. I mean, you know, I know our illustrious friend Maggie Campbell talks about it all the time, but you know, there's a lot of synergies between the wine industry and the beer industry and the whiskey industry. Mm-hmm. And really where we all kind of meet is talking about flavor and what causes flavors and smells. And a lot of that is based off where the grains are grown and what happens around those grains. And so, we're excited to be able to do that. It just, again, we're using 200 to 300 tons a year right now, so we need a lot of land to make that happen. So it's been tough.
Well, and I think anybody that I've talked to, mostly they are still having to get their malts from the north and from the UK. So it's, I mean, you do the best you can, and it's not something for everybody. It is more expensive, and it is, like you say, like you are limited to the resources, but I do like talking about it. We like talking about our farmers. They're really important, and maybe people think it's
no,
a corny.
It's no BS. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
They're definitely the unsung heroes of craft. Like, people keep forgetting. It's like, you guys work with whatever's the closest to you. You're not, when you start out, it's a necessity thing, right? Because you can't even get in with all these big brokers. You have to
Exactly. But it's a big difference, though. It's like shopping at Safeway or shopping at the farmer's market. I mean, you know, your impact, your dollar is going to go a hell of a lot farther with a local farmer than it's going to go with Safeway.
You're preaching to the choir. I love that you said that. I brought that up, you know, and Sam can attest. Like, how many times do we hear the conversation about people just losing their shit over, like, brewery stuff? And it's like, all they care about is beer, though. It's like nothing else. It's like, I only care. It's like the standards that they put towards small brewers. It's difficult. And I think I understand why they're doing it. But if you're going to do that, you have to do that to everybody. Why are you just applying those standards to brewers? Like, if, you know, they're so hard on the brewers, but it's like, you don't go to Walmart and give them like the third degree about where their shit's coming from. It's like, I'm not sure. And of course, like, yes, I would love everything to be like that. But why is it only about beer? I don't understand. I it's really,
you know,
it's
well, because beer guys have an opinion, right? I mean, beer guys,
they do.
Just like whiskey guys, you know, yeah, there's enough logs out there to kill a small army.
Right. It should be grounded in reality. I mean,
and then of course they want to buy bottles for $20. A bottle too, and you're like, listen, you can't have it both ways. Like, either you want to have something that's been handcrafted that I actually gave two shits to make, or you can go buy this big box stuff that's going to cost you $20 a bottle, and you can buy maybe two of them and put a cinnamon stick in and call it Fireball.
Well, and I think definitely, it's one of the things whenever I post pictures of Sam's, and I'll say this a lot, like whenever I feature something, it's like, it's, you know, I guess I have to be very careful about what I talk about online, but I go to the store like any other consumer, and I see something new and I want to try it. And it's very funny because I'm well aware of what everything costs, and people will say, that's, you know, it's really good, but it's really pricey. It's like a weird, it's a descriptor. It becomes like part of an adjective that they use. And it is so good. And that's why it costs more money. I don't really know really what to say when people say, and I know you hear it all the time, Sam, because it's something like, if I hear it all the time, I know you hear it all the time. But, and the same with Aaron, it's like one of those things where do you guys get, and their stuff, because, so Dark Matter in Chicago, and I definitely, I guess, you know, Aaron, before we kick in talking and asking you questions, why don't you tell listeners that may not be familiar with you guys, because everybody should know that they can. On the rare occasion when we have somebody who doesn't make alcohol, a lot of times the people that come on the show, you can either buy their stuff online from them or from a retailer. It's something that I don't know how the people who are retailing alcohol are getting around these laws, because, you know, like there's more and more retailers popping up. It's totally against the law. I don't know how it's happening, but anyway. Right. So anything that Aaron talks about, if you're interested, like, hop on their website, you may be able to order it from them.
Oh, yeah. Just like a little bit about the company, you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, after so all you know, that I just said, yes, you zeroed in on the actual point. Thank you.
You finished your sentence. Awesome. Yeah, nice.
So, I mean, yeah, we started at Star Lounge, and that was a small coffee shop. And, you know, when I came on, I really had no idea. You know, I never drank coffee before that. You know, I was given my first run of espresso there. And so I was kind of coming in completely blind, and, you know, that coffee shop ended up growing pretty substantially. I mean, we had a huge focus on like the direct neighborhood around us and made sure we took care of everybody. And, you know, there's a community aspect of it was super important. So we were not in the business of saying no to people, which our industry has a long way to go on that. it's kind of commonplace to walk into a coffee shop these days and just kind of shudder because we could just feel the pretension in the air. It's just sick.
Oh, pretension. We wouldn't know this industry anything about pretension.
But yeah, one of our patrons ended up helping us out and buying our first roaster, and from there we kind of started understanding how to roast coffee, and we've kind of learned together, and we got to this point where we opened up a roastery, and now we have four roasters right now, and two quarter baggers do about like 30 pounds each, and you know, we're kind of humming along right now.
You did say quarter bag, right? Oh no, we were sorry. We were vibing like, on something else around this table. Let's go on.
The whole idea with that coffee too. I mean, we started just roasting with an importer, and a lot of that is just kind of, you're going through a broker, a middleman, and you're kind of going through a catalog and you're buying it, and you know, after a while we just started looking at prices to like El Salvador and Honduras and Guatemala and Panama, and you know, we weren't very established yet, so all of us that wanted to go, we just paid out of pocket and took trips down there, which was surprisingly cheap. But you know, we're buying 250 round trip tickets to El Salvador and just walking around like crazy people and just meeting
I was gonna say unarmed. Like what?
Just walking up to strangers going, can we see your beans?
It's been really interesting how things kind of unfolded from there. I mean, we met a producer about 6 years ago and been working with him for ever since then. We did the same thing with Guatemala. We've been really open with meeting people and going to these countries to be able to kind of understand what's going on. And, you know, like the whole idea of like local too. I mean, you know, the idea for us really right now is local global. You know, we want to work with our neighbors. And I think the biggest thing for us is really focusing on, you know, Central and South America and trying to work, you know, as closely with them as possible. I mean, it's everyone is purchasing like these really expensive African coffees and, you know, going to Sumatra, which a lot of those coffees are just, you just can't get anywhere else. And they're very, very specific. But you do what you can.
Do you guys stick
with,
primarily to South and Central America? Is that where your coffees are coming from exclusively, or?
For the most part, I mean, it's difficult. We, you know, about 80% of like what we are purchasing right now is coming from either Mexico, Guatemala, or El Salvador. But there's some exceptions. Like we have a coffee from India that we use actually a ton of. And it's just a specific process that happens to the coffee.
Oh, is that the espresso? The espresso coffee? I think that.
That's exactly. And it's kind of been something we've had since the very beginning. And you know, as we've grown, they've been in like our primary blends. And you know, we're trying to actually look at this and try to experiment, see if we can't pull something off, like in Guatemala or something like that. It's
working with a grower and trying to get them to grow a bean that just that has those properties or those that profile.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey,
I mean,
what's
going on? About like
off the train tracks.
I feel like Drew has joined in. There's one person that calls like it's like dogs, like rabid dogs in the background.
You're young.
Sorry. No, it's okay. Yeah, it's how this is how we are. So what I guess I would love for listeners to hear about the relationship, and I'm sure like you guys have these relationships that you build with producers, so you can go to them. And of course, it's like how Sam would have people that grow hops for him, you know, where you're dealing with these people in agricultural product. And I know you guys are sourcing responsibly and you guys are paying like fair trade for stuff. Like, what is the difference between the people that you're working with? And do you see or hear about the people that are having to grow and do not have the same situation themselves where they're being taken advantage of? Or, I mean, I want people to really understand that there is a reason that they do pay more for coffee. If you're not, something is happening somewhere. And it's with anything, with food, drink, or something is being cut out, whether you're talking about the quality or whether somebody is not being compensated fairly for what you're being sold. It's not just somebody doesn't want to make less money because they're making a ton of money. So I would.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'd be really curious what that experience is like when you go down there, and if you do meet people who maybe have switched from a situation like that to working with people that are paying them what they deserve for what they're growing.
I mean, well, it's always like a country by country because, I mean, there's a lot of things politically that really, really affect what's going on with each country. You know, specifically Mexico, we've been trying really hard to do as much business as we can with them. I mean, but you're starting to see little things like these little intermediaries that are coming in like late in harvest and, paying cents on the dollar for a lot of these coffees because these farmers in desperate positions.
Oh, like the limes. Wasn't that the lime stuff? What happened with the limes? Isn't that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah. And, you also have companies like AMSA, and these are companies that are financing people's mills and, giving them a lot of money and also buying their coffee. So it's like a very cyclical kind of all in control, situation, they end up losing their mills, end up losing their farms, and especially right now, there's a lot of diseases that are going up and down all of Central America and South America, and they are just destroying crops. It's called roya, or rust, it's been a huge issue. I mean, in Guatemala, they lost like 80% of all crops a couple of years ago, and it was just a state of emergency down there, and people couldn't pay any of their bills, so a lot of people lost what they were doing. I mean, you have like Guatemala and Mexico specifically, 95% of your producers are small producers, so they're really only looking at 2 to 4 acres of land with coffee, which isn't very much. So they have to work with cooperatives. And those cooperatives are what get their coffee distributed and they get paid through them. And, with us, beautiful thing about, going down there and having our own relationships, obviously, is the transparency. I mean, you know exactly how everything's running, the workers, how they're processing, if there's chemicals being used, what coffee tree, just like a wine grape, like the cultivars, exactly what you're buying. We've gone through importers before, and sometimes there is absolutely no information. And a lot of that, you'll see other companies that are purchasing through importers and they'll have like these AMSA bags stamped on them, they'll have a stamp of AMSA. And, people don't know exactly what they're buying. I mean, it's like innocent, because they don't understand what AMSA means.
Yeah, what does AMSA mean?
You go to Mexico. Actually, I don't know what it means. I don't know what it stands for. I know the company.
Somebody want to Google it?
So,
he's got Colin's laugh. He laughs like Colin Joliet. Nice.
Red jacket, yellow jacket. Who gives a shit?
It's very cool, and I think the fact. I mean, you guys do. You're going down there. It's not like going to Washington. But I mean, like that's a trip, and I think that's a big deal.
Yeah.
But I love. It is like people, like with anything that we ever talk about, people can say it's just fill in the blank. But, these are people who rely solely on the revenue that they're making from these coffee beans. So it's great that these guys are taking it on themselves. It would be a lot easier and I'm sure less expensive. Well, I don't know about expense, but it would definitely be a lot easier for you not to be making a trip down to South America.
Yeah.
In Central America to buy coffee beans.
Oh, but they're fun.
Oh, I bet. I bet. We'll talk about those stories off the air.
I mean, the interesting thing about that, too, is like the, brewers and distillers and all these people that, especially you two guys, I mean, I've drawn way more inspiration outside of my, industry than within it. Just because you have... people have had, sometimes thousands of years of information that they're able to know and understand. And coffee is only like, specialty coffee at least is only 10 years old.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's not a lot here. And, when I look at how beer, like coffee is fermented, when I look at beer, when I, understand that, thankfully I have Noah here teaching me a whole bunch of that. Like, understanding yeast, because yeast are really important. And
well, it's all how, people don't realize chocolate. It's all the same. It's fermentation. There's so many. Mm-hmm. There's so many, and it's stuff that like we end up covering in craft. It was like a really interesting when we did a fermentation, that preservation issue we did. And it is, there's tons of stuff people don't realize, like that's where all the characteristics come in and what makes something that's seemingly the exact same, whether you're talking about it's a, you know, cacao or a coffee bean. These are those things that create, like the beer. I mean, Sam can brew, just because of where Sam's brewery is, they could have the same formula. You're not going to get the same beer if he's in Sonoma brewing the same beer.
We have great water.
And fermentation is more important than roasting, you know? I mean,
it's all like same, the water, the grains, the where the grains are grown, it's all of these things factor in, and it is really interesting.
The word importance is hard there.
Did I say important?
That's the word I heard him say importance earlier, and the thing is that, like, you know, we are all living our individual lives, right? I'm certainly not going to start getting all sappy on y'all, but the reality is that, you know, we're doing things that we enjoy, and we're doing things that we love, and each one of us is contributing to one another, either directly or indirectly, and there's no way to know necessarily where that comes to play until I go out there and have a choice to go buy beans. What kind of beans am I going to buy? And am I going to buy beans for my guys that have been with tons of pesticides? Am I going to buy beans that are organic? Am I going to buy beans that are sourced with a person I can trust? Or is it going to be some big conglomerate who tells me that they do it?
Right.
And, of course, you talk about roast levels and enjoyment and all these type of things.
Right.
And at the end of the day, you know, I think we're all doing things in our own way. The reality is, you know, I'm unfortunately not a master distiller, so I can only talk about my 7 years of experience thus far, but... You know, maybe
I thought you just have to call
more.
Yourself a master. I'm just kidding. You actually should.
No.
You know I'm totally kidding. From my experience, a lot of people refer to themselves as a master distiller.
Allow me to rip those some bitches open.
I'm not going to tell you my $20
I give
Groupon
people a lot of credit
distilling.
When they say I'm the head distiller. I'm the, you know, I'm like, you know, because a lot of people immediately feel like if they refer to themselves as a master distiller, they're immediately going to get a certain level of respect by saying it doesn't make it so.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can dream it, but it's not something that you are. I mean, the reality is that it's something that should be acquired over many, 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 many years of study. And frankly, some of the best master distillers in the world oftentimes don't even call themselves master distillers because they don't have enough time to do that. They're out there actually distilling and blending, and you know they don't give two shits what they're called. They
proof
want
is
to
in
make
the pudding.
The best product.
All you have to do is taste what they're making. Oh, well, I wanted to. It was something, you know, Aaron said that they're heavily influenced by things outside of the industry. Before I actually ask that question, what does a director of coffee do?
Speaking
of master distillers,
I do a lot of different. Yeah, so
master,
I mean, I'm involved. I made the quality control program in the I was a roaster for some time before we got someone else to kind of run the program. But I'm looking over roasting, quality control, wholesale, and production. So. Just kind of overseeing all that stuff and making sure everything's running right and the product is, you know, up to speed and everyone's communicating. So it's a lot of shit. Can I cuss on this? I'm sorry.
Oh, fuck no. Matter of fact, last show I was so embarrassed because I was the only one who was dropping F-bombs and shit. And yeah, I was. And it happens when I drink.
But you were sober last week.
I was still drinking. Now there's different levels of. I was sober, but I was
tasting.
We went through a lot of alcohol.
We did go through a lot of alcohol.
Okay, I wanted to say that
I have
a bottle. I didn't want us to get like into too much whiskey because I want to drink Sam's beer too.
Yes.
But there's another bottle of the Sonoma rye that's cherry wood.
Oh.
Will you go get that? Yeah, the boys were saying they really like the rye, so I'm like, you got to check
the
cherry wood.
I like the bourbon.
I like them all. I've had them all, but I hadn't had the bourbon yet, Adam, because remember we featured that last issue. And I really, people think I drink so much. I really don't. It's like every time you see I take a photo, that's when I'm actually drinking. I don't drink and not photograph it because I have to take the opportunity.
Most people
to
are
promote.
The exact opposite. You realize
well,
that, right?
Right.
I never drink, but when I do, I photograph.
Yeah, well, yeah. I have to promote. You know, I want to make sure that
I'm
people,
the opposite.
I want to make sure that people are seeing everybody's product. So. I
drink alone.
I think, you know, I've been like on a I love Manhattans and I've been on a real Manhattan kick. So I think probably when I had anything, well, I think even your rye, except when I first get it, the first time I drink spirits, I always drink them neat. But when I, for the sake of promoting all the tertiary ingredients, I have to make a cocktail. Anyway, I'm just, drink up. Drink up. So,
oh, no, I mean, you know, that's the fun part is that once it's in a bottle and you've got it in your hands, you do whatever the hell you want with it. I mean,
that's right. So we delete all my excuses out of the show. Yes.
Yeah, my job is to direct you, not necessarily to actually physically go out there and tell you what to do with your own products. So I like that. But no, I mean, we like cocktails here too. I mean, the good news is if you start with a good base, just like with anything, if you start with a good base, you really don't need a lot of stuff to kind of bring it to the surface. So, you know, old fashions or Sazeracs or even Boulevardiers will do real well with it. And we always have fun.
Yeah. For the sake of working and getting anything done, I'm very much an equal parts Manhattan drinker. And it's not always with vermouth. I'll do it with some other type of like, whether it's an Amari or some, you know, I like fortified wines, meaning like I like sherry's, Amontillados, you know, I like, you know, whether they're a little bit savory or sweet, I prefer those. I hope, if we get a vermouth producer on here, remind me, I didn't say this. I prefer those to vermouth. If I want to get kind of like those other flavors going on, those little nuances, I'm pretty much going to do that with bitters. Mm-hmm. But that's just me. Yep. I do like the Italian vermouth. That's probably like the ones.
Hey, try bitter in your coffee. It'll change your life.
Oh, I do. You need to follow my Instagram.
I've never done that.
I put a ton of bitters in my coffee. A matter of fact,
really?
A lot. And you know who
so
makes really
whatever.
Killer?
What's your favorite bitter going into coffee?
I feel really bad saying this because there's a lot of really,
you like aromatics? Okay.
There's a lot of really great bitters out there. But if I can, I need to hook you guys up with because you would love, I think, to have his stuff in your shop. Oh my gosh, I'm totally brain farting. Let me look away. I totally need the
Jeopardy drop right now.
Okay, you guys just talk about. Oh my
what
gosh,
is Mile High bitter?
Okay, I mean seriously, no, I really do love this El Guapo bitters. He does like okay. this. Well, depending on where you are in the South, chicory, hickory. He also does. This like holiday pie one, they're just really, really subtle and nice. And they're so good in coffee. I like bitters a lot of different, but I tend to use his in my coffee. My oatmeal, when I do like overnight oatmeal, I put his bitters in my oatmeal. Really.
Oh, Lord, no.
No, or like, well,
yeah, no, I've been recently on this, there's a guy in my area called Smoked Olive, and I've been putting smoked brown sugar
in
my
nice.
Oatmeal. Talk about life-changing.
Totally. Awesome. Or when, like, if you, like macerating fruit, if you put it on your yogurt or if you put it in your oatmeal, it's so good. Like, to me, it's, like, the more, like, it sits around for a couple days, like, with a little bit of maple syrup. Holy shit, it's
And that's exactly how, actually, and no BS, this is actually how formulas come to be.
Yeah.
It's like, what are things that play really well together, and then how can you kind of manipulate that in your beer? How can you manipulate that in your whiskey? You know, what are finishing barrels you can use to impart the flavors that perhaps the grains can't give you? I mean, it's exactly how shit gets created. It's like, what tastes good together? I recently picked up a book called The Flavor Bible, which I would strongly recommend to everyone.
I have the digital one. It's really – you say that. I don't refer to it too much, but I do have it. It's really, really good.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's just what plays together and what works together, and the next thing you know, you're like, oh, shit, that's awesome.
And I'll say Elizabeth Powell, one of my columnists, was the one who told me about that. She uses it a lot. She makes really great cocktails, and she relies on that. So but I want to talk to Sam, but I want to talk about the influence that you have by other stuff, because you guys, whether people know this or not, whether they're familiar with Dark Matter, you guys do collaborations with a lot of breweries, and you do a lot of collaborations with musicians. So I don't know if the musicians come in, if you guys are, if the musicians come in and actually work with you guys, or just like their music is what influences the coffee that, they have a November Rain, nice. Which I was like, they do, but they do like Judas Priest. They've done, they've done stuff with Three Floyds. They've done stuff with Pipeworks. Nice. Sammy, how come they're your buddies over there? When are you guys going to do coffee?
It's been kind of interesting with a lot of like how we've been working with them, because it's been kind of a strange progression. I mean, it happened by accident, and then, you know, opportunities kept coming. And our first thing was Mastodon. And after we released that coffee with Mastodon, we did a partially barrel-aged, pulp bean coffee.
You say dough-aged? Barrel-aged. Sorry.
reggae. Sorry.
And it worked out really well. So that's when Judas Priest came along, and we started working with those guys. And from there, I mean, we've done the other one we've done is with Lawrence Arms. With them, they've just been really good friends of ours, and they've been really great to us. And, you know, we did that for Riot Fest when they were just when they were playing, and they've been doing it a couple of years in a row. So really love working with those guys. And we have, something that we're working on with the Refused, and that's something that I'm really looking forward to. They were really, really great,
you
and they wanted
the used,
to give
right?
input.
Is that what he said? The Used?
No, the Refused.
Sorry. I'm having a lot of, I think the whiskey is preventing me from hearing. So. Go on, Aaron.
I mean, it all depends. It all depends on how their like management is. Sometimes management will be super protective and be like, do not talk to them. Or sometimes they'll be like really open and we'll have a lot of flexibility and be able to, collaborate.
Yeah, I can't imagine they're getting that many requests of that nature either. So they probably, a lot of them probably think that's pretty cool.
And of course, I don't want to get into like stuff that's not been published with Kraft, but like just like we've started to work a lot more with musicians, and it's really great because when the musicians are into what we're doing, there's like no problem. And like that's when you want to keep working with them, because they're immediately like, I will have them responding back to any requests that I have. Rather, like they're like really digging what we're already doing. It's always weird to me when somebody is already reading Kraft. I mean, that's one of those things where I'm like, I don't expect. It's always great when they don't say no, but when somebody's like, oh, yeah, I already read the magazine. I'm like, okay, very cool. But it's the same because, they have – it's a really important voice that they have. And when they're happy to lend it to small producers to talk about this kind of stuff or what it actually means, like you get, a musician who's like really into beer or really into whiskey or really into food.
Yeah. What's the process like when you collaborate with them? Are you – taking their input, obviously, and like, how does that all go down?
Yeah, how many times is it like they don't know what they're talking about?
So most of the time, they don't even live in the city, so it's a lot of emailing and mailing product and just long back and forth. And some, when they're in the city, it's obviously much easier. But it all depends on the person, where they're at. I mean, when you work with someone overseas, that's when it gets rough, because you got to send a package and you don't know how long it's going to take to get there.
Or if it's going to get to them.
Yeah.
So so when you're working with a brewer or working with a brewery, is it just a matter of doing stuff with barrels and swapping out barrels, or what do you guys like, what have been the different, off the top of my head, I definitely remember Three Floyds and I had the Pipeworks collaboration. So the Pipeworks, if I recall correctly, the Pipeworks was barrels that they had that had been whiskey barrels. And then, of course, they had aged their beer, and then you guys then went ahead and barrel-aged your beans in that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You knocked that out. Usually I can't even say that sometimes. It's so hard for me to keep all the steps.
You got me at a good moment.
Yeah, exactly.
So is that usually what it's like with brewers? It's just a barrel working with them. You love this beer. Can we get a barrel from you guys and we'll barrel age? It's because it's all really, usually it's limited release stuff, I think, at least what I've seen.
No, you're right. I mean, it all depends. I mean, there's a couple different ways we collaborate. Way it started with Half Baker, and we started doing Big Hugs. It was an Imperial Stout, and where it is an Imperial Stout. One of the owners lives in the neighborhood, and he knew us pretty well, and it was when we were pretty small. So he just walked in one day. He's like, hey, you guys want to do a beer together? And we're like, yeah, absolutely. That was a great opportunity. So we just started to play with them and like do all these different experiments. And ever since we started that, now we're going to be on year 7, I believe. And we've tried to not replicate how we extract the coffee for the actual beer itself. I mean, we've done some crazy stuff. Like we brought a whole bunch of espresso machines to the brewery, and we had, you know, 10 staff members pulling shots for about 12 hours straight to be able to get like this huge concentration of
coffee for their beer.
Yeah. And then, you know, just ridiculous stuff over the top. And, you know, I'm sure we've broken a record somehow. I mean, there was a point where we did 1,000 pour overs, you know, in a matter of 10 hours. I mean, just crazy. And so, I mean, with Half Baker, the success from the Big Hugs, it kind of just rippled out. And we got lucky enough to start working with, you know, Pipework and Revolution and Local Option and doing more of like the beer side. Yeah, we do a couple things. Bean Gene is one of them. And then we also collaborate like on smaller projects with them that they do with their tap room. Marty's like a really good friend of mine. He does really, really supportive of our company. And it's been a really nice relationship, especially just all the brewers, man. They've been really fucking cool with us. So, and, you know, now we're looking at different things because now we started working on barrel aging, and that became a new option for us. And it's a little bit harder to get barrels from distilleries, and we do it from time to time. But now, because we have such a good relationship with the beer industry in Chicago, everyone's been sending us barrels after they, you know, they dump all the beer.
How nice for you.
And,
So are you guys having humidity issues too? Is that something that becomes an issue for you on your end though? I mean, like,
moisture?
Yeah, like moisture issues and like just trying to deal with the barrels after being formerly used, obviously.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the roasting process is it's really, really hot. So we have, you know, we're going through like 600 degree heating elements that, you know, are make sure it's all good. But you're exactly right. Like moisture content is super important. And it really, it's all just moisture exchange. So, you know, with coffee, we have to, you know, just for like a frame of reference, you know, we get coffee fresh from a producer at like 12% moisture. And that's when it's pretty stable and it's really good for the roaster and it's really consistent. Anything higher than that, you start running into really bad inconsistency issues in the roaster. So we want to get coffees that dried out maybe a little bit after you've been sitting for a couple months and be able to get that moisture back and rehydrate through the barrel itself. And it's kind of crazy. Like we just shot the jar for the first time and the results were so amazing. We haven't stopped and, you know, there's definitely been some weird stuff, but it's been nice. And now we're starting to talk about using like, you know, Brettanomyces or using hops or using those kinds of things
in coffee.
Fermentation tanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
can you imagine a funky coffee? Like
Yeah. I mean, awesome. You know, the thing about like fermentation is all natural in the, you know, especially in Central America, it's like natural yeast, it's natural microbes and bacteria that are just in the air. But no one really ever tries to control that fermentation.
What the final results would be right. So interesting. Yeah, huh. And I wonder if that would be better as a cold, like to serve it cold as opposed to.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing too, is like, you know, we've never really, you know, most mills, especially in fermentation tanks over there, they're all outdoors. And, you know, there's something that I, you know, really want to try is just really controlling that. So, you know, most of these wild yeast, they just produce acetic acid. So, you know, it takes only a little bit of time before the coffee starts tasting like vinegar. So you have to be really careful.
Yeah.
But if we were to control that and use like a, you know, let's say a champagne yeast or a brewer's yeast, and you know, keep that in a pretty controlled environment.
Sounding like a brewer.
No kidding.
For a minute, I was like, wait, whoa.
Yeah, he went from being a lone little dove, like, oh no, I'm not a big old brewer.
Champagne.
Now it's dry.
I know, right? Boom. Walk, Aaron. Walk while you sound so awesome. Yeah. So say we're gonna totally, Aaron, we're gonna have to have you come back on, because first of all, you're awesome. You're an awesome guest. But yeah, I do think there's so much more to talk about. I would love to see them do a collaboration with, like, you know, Sam or somebody. I'm always trying to pawn somebody off on Sam, source pawn Sam off on somebody. I'm not sure which. Depending on I think the world
is
Sam.
It's only a matter of time.
Well, I think Sam.
I'll go to Wilmington with anybody.
Exactly. Well, Sam's beers, which by the way, we're drinking showing up. I bought so much showing of this up. Stuff. I got so excited. So I'm going to fast forward because our listeners do know Sam, and then I want him to talk about a couple things, but. He was one of the columnists on Craft. You know, he was doing the Brewer on Brewer Action column, and then they were doing brewery expansion and got really busy. I mean, he got just too busy to do it. And been traveling, was in Canada, and did a collaboration in the UK, has been all over the place. They're canning now, where they weren't canning before, which I love the cans. I love the bottles, don't get me wrong, but even still, these tall boys, these are hard for me to finish. Unless I'm drinking with a bunch of people, I'm so glad you guys are doing these, because I'm happy to share a bottle, but I hate having to wait.
They've been doing good in Georgia anyway. I mean, it's kind of hard to find.
I was such a dork the first time I saw them, just because it was like three bottles, right? And I mean, I think your beers are fantastic, and I know that I'm not alone, but the Show Enough is good. The Show Enough is a low-down golden ale. And the boys just always have the funniest artwork and the funniest. Is this the baddest mofo low-down golden ale in this? Did you see the thing that I had said? When you see this, do you not want to see They Live? Does that not make you think of They Live? Or am I alone? Am I alone?
I did not think of that.
Does anybody know what They Live is? It was like this movie from
the
80s.
Are you talking about the documentary?
No, I'm talking about the Roddy Piper.
Was that a documentary?
Holy shit. Yeah, the documentary.
That was not. Was that a documentary?
Obey.
Shut up, Sam. I'm sitting here thinking, I'm going to be honest, I was so stoned. Like, I saw that movie twice in the theaters. The first time, we didn't even remember it ending. We had to go back, and the second outcome was not that different. It's like, how did that... That in a movie called Tapeheads, which I think those movies came out about the same time. I'm going to say Miami, the weed was really good in Miami in that period, because I don't remember a lot of movies that I saw.
I would imagine the coke was, too.
Yeah,
we should probably don't need to talk about this. That was never my thing. I got to tell you, I went to parties where it was like little piles on the tables, and it's just not been my. I feel actually okay talking about weed because it's becoming legal in so many places. And did you see Hillary Clinton? Not that she's abroad, I would vote for, but she's a proponent of weed legalization now.
Aren't
we all?
She was for it before she was against it. Yeah,
well, look, I want to be careful not to get too political on here, because I certainly can. But yeah, I'm like, anybody who's okay, it's like, just tax it and make it legal already. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of the discussion. Everybody's people that you just don't even think are smoking weed or smoking weed. So often am I like blown away when I meet somebody where I'm like, you know. My doctors.
Well, I certainly love all the politicians. All those politicians who get in trouble who are like, no, weed's bad. And
I'm with a hooker who's got...
bad. those gay guys are the worst. And then next thing you know,
they're like... sleeping with men.
With gay hookers while they're stoned. It's like, what the fuck? Fucking liars.
Sam, that's the next beer.
The next
right there.
Beer.
Yeah. Sex with gay hookers while you're stoned.
Hypocrite beer.
I think we're gonna do gay dudes sleeping with hookers.
I mean, the beer just writes itself. I'm thinking that's a Brett beer though, isn't it? Isn't that a Brett beer?
Yeah, it's gotta be.
Gotta be wild.
It's a new Pligamy Porter. Don't worry.
That's right.
So with Sam, of course, like the brewery expansion. How are you guys still? Are you done?
Are you
How's
expanding
that going?
In the same location?
No, no.
It's huge.
We're never done. We just added another, I guess it would have been another 2,000 barrels of annual capacity with some more tanks.
Nice.
So happy for you guys.
We had a scanning machine. I liked it. Everyone asked me, how's everything going? I'm like, well, it's okay. It's fine, I guess. But it's like when you have children and you buy them clothes and
it doesn't
2 weeks
end.
Later, they don't fit. Never ends. Yeah.
That's so a great analogy.
I just talked to we hired a head brewer, and Jerry, who was the brewmaster, my business partner, is still our brewmaster, but he is he's a professional wrestler now.
Okay, well, that was gonna be my next thing. We'll talk about. Don't get into that just
get
yet.
Taken by the wrestler.
Well, this will be the next conversation we have. But Adam, I thought Adam Watson is really doing a lot of the
he had twins. So his wife had twins, and he has to stay at home. So he's at home like forever now, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, so he's not at the brewery right now?
No, no. Adam, his wife just had twins last week.
Oh, so congratulations, Adam.
Taking we're excited for him, but we're also like, okay.
You're shitting
man,
your drawers, yeah.
Awesome. so we've added two more fermenters. We are adding another bright tank, and I think we'll probably add another, we're at 6,000 or 8,000, depending on what kind of beers we brew barrels per year. We'll probably jump to 15 or 20 with our expansions next year.
What system do you use?
We have a 30 barrel. It's a three vessel. I'm sorry, what's that?
No, I'm just wondering what kind of system you have.
It's a three-vessel, 30-barrel brew house. It's oversized because we brew around 8% by volume beers on average. So, and it was produced in it's all American. It was produced by Springfin in Wisconsin.
Nice.
We can turn about 150 to 210 barrels a day, depending on what we're brewing. So, it's different. It's a much different system, but my goodness.
Are you going to keep the brewery going at the original? Will you keep a pilot system, or you're going to full speed?
Yeah, no, okay. our pub is still going at capacity.
So, will you do more of your experimental stuff there?
Yeah, I mean, we have we like to call our mainline beers, there's 12.
Yeah.
So, I was going to say, I feel like everything you do is experimental, but
I was going to say they've slowly, when you guys first came on the show, everything they did, almost everything they did exclusively was a one-off. Cause you remember we went through exactly. And it was, and
it's
I love that,
way.
But it's really difficult when you go into production and you're paying to have cans designed and doing, exactly. You gotta.
And also, I mean, we are this is my company. This is what we do. My attention span and my partners, we're like gnats. I mean, it's really just like
I've worked with Sam before.
You blink
true.
Your eye. you blink your eye and you're like, I'm not interested anymore. And so that's really what it is. So these cans, you know, I don't mind to pull the trigger and buy a container or whatever it is to do it. But I can't say that like
forever I'm gonna be doing more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is. It just is what it is.
Have you noticed a flavor difference at all between can and over bottle? Is that something that you're conscious of?
To nerd out, our DO picked up on the cans. Like the DO is so much smaller on our cans because we spent we blew our load on the cans on the machine. So. I mean, it's good. It's a really good one. So
I'm going to clean that one.
It's legit. It's big beer standards. The bottles was a little bit different, and also they're still light with the bottles, even though it's a brown bottle. You know, they're still a bit of light, and this is much different, and it's so much faster. The fills are I want to say 200% faster. So it's beautiful whenever these go out, but I'm still not happy. It's not perfect.
What do you need, Sam?
Well, we can always get better. We will always get better. I have to say that.
I never had Shownuff in a bottle, so I don't know the difference. I would love for 35K to come in a can.
It's in a can already.
Oh, I didn't see it here. Maybe I need.
No, it's that because it's this month. Or well, okay. I guess last month. October.
He doesn't love me enough to make sure that I have 35 in a can.
Oh, we're doing the best we can.
pun intended. Yeah.
When you're finished this, we need to drink more.
We're getting them out there for sure. It's just going to take a bit of time. You know, we still have to grow quite a bit.
Brian and Kevin. I'm sorry. Go on. I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's cool. We're forever growing. That's what we are at the moment.
Yeah, you guys are rocking it out. And I was telling Corey before we started recording that my wife actually picked off the shelf by herself. She doesn't normally drink a ton of beer.
Allie, he's super proud of you.
I am. she grabbed a 4-pack of the Brown Note.
Of all the beers that she grabbed, yeah. I do find it surprising that Allie grabbed the Brown Note.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally.
Because that's the one that he gets the most shit about.
Yeah, I do. Sure. My God, that just made me so happy.
Yeah, she did. And actually,
she's very lovely. And the fact that she pulled of all, and I said that to him, I was like, she grabbed the Brown Note of all
so
the beers.
I was like, you know, I don't have kids, but if I, you know, it's like the same kind of proudness you feel when you're finished.
It's really fascinating. So we're growing so rapidly. We've been approached by a lot of like C-stores and then chains and things like that, you know. And so, you know, when the opportunity presents itself, you're like, God, should I adjust? But I was approached by one of the biggest, in the Midwest, one of the biggest stores is Kroger. You know Kroger?
Mm-hmm.
You're not familiar with
them. Oh, yeah.
They're mm-hmm. huge, you know. And they were like, would you be willing to change the Brown Note label? And I said, you're out of your fucking mind.
I love you guys awesome. So much for staying true to yourself. It's difficult.
You know how hard it was to hit that Brown Note, and now
I want to change it. I mean, on principle, it's like I love that the guys, and probably this is like the adolescent in them, they, as long as they're going to get shit for Brown Note, they're going to keep making it, and they're never going to change the label.
Yeah.
When it's old news, we'll switch it.
Yeah.
As long as people keep telling them, like, you're gross. I mean, I can't, like, it was one of the ones, and you know, Sam, like, you would see me publicly just say, like, listen, they can call it whatever they want because they make killer beer.
Yeah.
You start making great beer consistently, you can charge what you want for it, and you can call it whatever you want.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, she actually took it to a party this weekend and where a bunch of her girlfriends were going to be. So I was like out of the corner of my eye making sure to watch when she pulled that out and showed it to her girlfriends.
Did they pay attention?
They did. They made the stink face at first at the label.
The little
I wasn't super surprised at that, but when they tasted it, they made the opposite of a stink face. So
and now they're all sold. They're exactly. all they have shit exactly. pants in their fridge.
Are you guys before I want to get on to the wrestling stuff, but before that, what was, because I never really got a chance to talk to you about it. What was the deal with the trip to Canada? Are you guys, was that for you guys to start distributing in Canada?
Okay. So, yeah, we will, yes. Ultimately, though, it was not necessarily self-serving. My partner Adam and I, well, Adam ultimately is really, really connected with the state government in Kentucky. And we were asked as a business if we would represent craft brewing for Kentucky on a trade mission to Canada.
And they met you before, right? Sam?
They know.
I love it.
The goal was to do like a feasibility study, and we did that. And what came from that, I think, it blew the state officials that we were with. It blew them away because we traveled with a governor and like an envoy of
Sam wore suits.
Diplomats, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we were real. We were just real, real people at these events, you know, and I'm meeting like ambassadors and representatives from different provinces and different states. And then of course, federal government officials. And I think it really struck them how important it was that like real businesses with real people and the brewer, like it was really good that
right,
it was
you're not
brewers,
just a representative of a company, of a major corporation. It's very different.
Yeah.
By the way, we're all drinking Citras down, and everybody's like, ugh. They're humping their glasses.
I haven't been listening for like the last couple minutes. Sorry. I've been.
Yeah, Canada.
Can I bathe? Yeah,
Matt's making like the O face.
Can you send me enough of this so I can bathe in it?
Sorry. Go on. You were making the O face.
I'm at these parties. Diplomats that know President Obama, and they all have suits on, and I have cargo shorts and a t-shirt.
You had a suit on. And I saw the pictures of you in a suit.
That was a day. That was a single day. But it got real. And
it got real.
These guys, they really, it was so good because they really get it. I never ever thought that they would, and I never thought that, but they get it. And I think that that's very representative of the success that craft beer has right now. You know, that the people, and also the people that matter beyond just the constituent, they get it. And it was so good. And so now we have this really, like, it's like a red carpet into Canada to do business. And I've shared with all of my Kentucky friends how to do it. In fact, if any American brewer wanted to know, just shoot me a message and I'll tell you, like, it's not so hard.
We need somebody to hook them up with a red carpet into Georgia.
Georgia's a nightmare. I was very happy to see the boy, you know, to see him. Well, Adam, you're going to be distributed here. Are you here now? Because I know he was coming.
We're there. Okay. Yeah, no, it's a very expensive state. I mean,
it's a pain in the ass.
The license is a couple grand a year. I've never seen anything like that before. But with that said, you know, we're in and we're doing it. And you know, the reality is,
are you in Kentucky?
Not yet. It's on the to-do list, especially with the west of Kentucky bourbon with a beautiful picture of the Kentucky Bridge in the front. It's going to be it'll be real interesting.
Goes over.
You'll be surprised at how well it's received, I think.
I hope so.
People in Kentucky are very open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty capable. We just try to make good whiskey, and I think the Kentucky guys will get that. You know, the reality is if we can start finding ourselves in markets that we're in Tennessee right now. We just went into Tennessee recently. I mean, you know, these kind of like, you know, baskins of whiskey, you know, history. You know, we can kind of say, listen, we're just a new take on it. You know, we're Californians. We do things a little different. We wear flip-flops to work, and we, you know, we just do stuff a little different.
Sam is not that different.
No, I get it. Trust me, we're not the model normal guy either.
I'm sure right now it's like, again, I always say, like, I think it's really because that ATG is doing such an amazing job of producing beer that they're so, I mean, these are guys, like, Sam is from Ohio, but, like, these guys are, like, in the South, they're from the South, you know, they're very much embraced now, but at the time, it's like, it's such a traditional place. Like, Louisville is really starting to become a lot more progressive than it was.
Yeah, but just have respect when you go to someone else's home, right? I mean, that's the thing that...
But you got to kick this. Like, I've been in the South for like 15 years. Like, we need a good kick in the ass. Like, there's just stuff that people don't do it because it's like the best way to do it. It's just, it's how it's been done for so long that they don't want to try something else. It could even be like the worst thing and they don't want to change because it's just how it's done.
Yep.
Like the Scrapple of life.
Really
Scrapple?
It's the Scrapple of life. It's a shitty way of doing things, but it's ours.
The really great thing is, though, Louisville is coming along, and even, like, you know, even though it's out of the norm to have producers that are from far away, people accept that, and that's good. You know, honestly, I think that's why beer is caught on in Louisville, because, you know, before we were just like redheaded stepchild. I mean, when you have bourbon and bourbon is hundreds of years old, my God, nobody even wants to pay attention to you, you know.
Right.
But we've done it. You know, people take notice now, and it feels good. It really does feel good.
Yeah, I mean, you also got Copper Kings out there too. I mean, the distiller over.
Oh, they're Willett. Amazing.
Drew is young as hell over at Willett. I mean, the reality is that there is kind of a resurgence of some youthful vigor in there. Whether or not it's going to do anything, we'll see. But the reality is, you know,
it is happening. I see. I'm here. It is amazing.
Copper is amazing.
Wonderful. Yeah. Joe Heron, they're killing it over there, and that's another thing, world-class brandy. My God, who can boast it? You know,
Willette.
Yep.
Is that what you're talking about?
The Willette? Copper and Kings, the brandy.
Oh. You know, we featured them at one point. Aaron had featured them, so I haven't even tried. I haven't even tried their stuff. I think they were going to send me.
No,
some,
I mean it's
I didn't
cool. They're doing their own thing, and they're doing their own thing their way. I mean, that's the thing. It's so cool is that, like, you know, they're doing stuff in kind of the basket of bourbon.
Yeah.
You know? Like they're in the, yeah. they're in the treehouse of bourbon, and they're making their own thing, and that's cool. And that's you know, I think that's part of what's so nice from a consumer perspective is that over the next couple of years you're going to start being able to drink stuff locally that was only available nationally. And
yeah.
And that's sure. going to change for- things.
Pro tip on Copper and Kings, the brandy is amazing. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is.
It's fine. do the absinthe. My God, the absinthe that they make.
I've seen you talk. And I know Sam did an intro with me with one of the owners, I think. So I definitely need to follow up with the guys. But I want to talk, Sam, before we go, I want to talk about Pofo Pills. I want to talk about the wrestling match between the Brewmasters and the Dauntless Distributing guys. I don't think it's surprising to know what we know about the guys, to know that they're very into wrestling.
Things have finally escalated to the point where I'm concerned.
About what?
I'm concerned about what's happening in our day to day. So we made this Pilsner, right? Jerry mm-hmm. and I are talking about it. He's like, what do you want to call it? And I said, well, all of the good Pilsners that are made in America, the name starts with P. The letter starts with P. And he was like what? And I'm like, well, Pivo and you know, Prima. And he was like, So what do you think? What do we call it? You know, what do you think? And I was like, well, perfect. And he goes, how about Poffo? And I said, Leaping Lanny.
Poffo, I said it wrong.
Lanny. He said, you know who Leaping Lanny is? And I was like, yeah. I mean, I watch wrestling. Of course, I know who Leaping Lanny Poffo is.
I have no idea.
And he was like, do you know who Macho Man is? And I was like, yeah, of course. Macho Man is a Poffo. And so we start like throwing wrestling trivia at each other, you know, like, oh you know
fest.
This, you know that, like... you know, and it turned in, it turned into like a bro fight, you know, about wrestling, and then it's like, okay, we're gonna call it Poffo Pills, and I'm of course I'm like, well, should we call the family? And he's like, no one will know,
Jerry.
so fast forward. And out of the blue, a wrestling promoter contacts us in Louisville and says, do you realize that the name that you've chosen for the beer that you had is relevant to this family name? And we're like,
no. What is the can look? Had you guys already done the artwork for the beer?
Oh, yeah. It's obvious. Well, I think you should. And so we start talking to him, and he's like, let's do an event. And the event has escalated from us just launching the beer at the event to my partners becoming professional wrestlers and wrestling. And at first it was just like a show, like them just doing it, like running out and yelling at each other. And now Jerry's coming off the top ropes and doing like flying butt flyers on people. Woo! And so, yeah, exactly. So naturally, we had to choose our, like, we're the good guys. We had to choose our bad guy. Well, of course, our bad guy is going to be our distributor because
who is
the most bottom feeding guy ever from nice.
Fuck yeah, the heel. I like it.
So if you guys haven't seen it, they've been posting the videos. Like, the shit show has begun. So it's like the guys are talking, you know, like they're shit talking in their little video. So it's pretty funny. So you have to follow. You need to follow ATG and see the videos.
Oh, I'm definitely going to start following this.
Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. World Brewers Wrestler
Federation.
Oh my God.
But so people know it's going to be at Slugger Field on November 21st. Will be if you want to see Jerry.
That's right.
Road trip.
I got to say, sure. you brewers got a lot of time on your hands.
he really has. Like, he has come in and I've been like, are you okay? And he's like, I may have broke my rib. I'm training. You mean you broke your rib for real? And he's like, I may have broken my rib.
Oh,
so you have to go to the doctor. So Jerry doesn't brew anymore. He's a professional wrestler.
Are you being serious? Has he quit brewing?
He has completely stopped brewing and is now professionally wrestling for mat.
This feels our very...
I see a sequel to the movie The Wrestler.
Are doing everything.
Yeah.
And he writes recipes, but... For the most part,
it feels
he just
very Andy
through, like,
Kaufman.
And lifts
I'm having an Andy Kaufman moment. Jerry, are you okay?
Yeah, right?
it's a total CrossFit moment. He just limps around the brewery, and we offer sympathy. And then also we have moments of like where I'm like, oh, I got an idea. Because I get to write all of the storyline, which is really awesome.
He's taking a lot of hits to the head, Sam. Just remember that.
The steel chairs. Yeah. Is every recipe suggesting involve protein powder?
Oh right.
Oh, it's great. So we're filling kegs. Today we're filling kegs, and I said, "Hey, how do you feel about doing a confrontation in the bar?" He just kind of winces and says, great idea. What time?
Oh no.
That's
all right,
hilarious.
It's Pofo Pills or it's Pofo Pills?
Pofo Pills.
Okay. Well, is Pofo Pills only going to be available for the event? Or are you guys going to start producing this?
No, it's one that we are really proud of. We've worked on this for quite a while. It's a true... Like it's a Pilsner, a classic German Pilsner, and
everybody should have a Pilsner that they.
I feel like everyone should drink Pilsner.
I think everybody should drink. No,
at the very least.
The boys are making faces. It's got to be a good one.
It's got to be a good one.
Everybody should have like a Pilsner that's really good that they enjoy, because it is one of those things that with food it goes.
If you are a beer drinker, there's no way in the world that you can say I don't like Pilsner. No one says that,
right?
True. Nobody.
Well, it's one of those things like when you're thirsty, it's really, really satisfying.
Yeah, but
it's like saying I don't like
it's not a
bread.
Slow sipping. Right.
No, but there's beauty and simplicity, and I think that's the thing about the Pilsner.
Oh yeah, I'm not. I'm happy with the Pilsner. If Pilsner's made well, this was the argument that I had when David Chang made his comment about that he doesn't like craft beer. No. But my thing was when he made the...
Momo, fuck that guy.
I get what he's saying. Like, fine, if you don't like hops or you don't like something too malty or a barrel finish, this or that. However, him saying it's like as though the only great lager available is by a macro producer. My thing was, I think he lost credibility when it wasn't just saying a macro, it wasn't just saying a lager or a Pilsner. Like, that's what I want to drink. I only want to drink this and kind of fuck all the craft brewers. I got to tell you, we were supposed to have, I'm going to get slammed and I may have to take this out once I'm sober.
Not editing
anything. We were supposed to have him in that issue, the issue that came out just before that he made this comment. And there's just no way. I'm like, this was I think it was like the second or third issue we had coming out. I'm like, how am I going to come up with an issue with a chef who has just basically told craft brewers to go fuck themselves? It was very, very, it was very weird moment.
I know so many brewers that would just be like, what are you saying?
Wait, but also
we
would make
together,
It's the same thing. It's like, why is it that your $200 prefix lunch that's beautifully crafted and you spend all this time with more valuable than a beer that's made with love? You may not like that particular beer, but I'm sorry. It was a really, really weird. I do think it was really just to stir the pot. I mean, it was a very bizarre, like, I love Budweiser.
Yeah, there's better. you know, there's better ways to get attention. He could have wrestled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a good one.
Right?
Exactly.
He may need a good kick to the head.
Wrestling.
I may never get David Chang in a magazine after this.
But we can get him in the ring.
We can get him in the ring.
Get him in the ring.
Listen, I think he's a great chef, but it was one of those things where it's like, why are you kind of kicking the guys who are like, a lot of the guys who are so into beer are the same people who are so into like these chefs that are doing just kind of outrageous things. It's the same. It was a weird time. So well, yeah, Pilsner.
As a fancy food eater,
yes.
I was really impressed with that.
Are we going to be able to get the pills in Atlanta?
You will, yes.
Yay.
We will actually, it will become a main line for us.
Wait, I just have to say that Brian went to go open. Now we're sitting on like these like really large tiles, like these mm-hmm. like stone tiles, and Brian decides to lean on the carpet to open the beer.
For the sake of audio, the cracking sound. I don't want Matt to have to edit that back out again.
No, he's sympathetic to my needs.
I'm not going
to
spill the beer. I respect the liquid. Come on now.
Exactly.
That was just, wait, why is he opening the beer over the carpet? Okay, anyway,
hey,
that was just funny.
I was smart enough to take my headphones off this time instead of getting launched onto the floor when I still had a mom when I got up. So.
You guys were amazing. All three of you are welcome back, and of course Sam great. Knows that he's welcome back anytime. Matter of fact, Sam, Aaron really wanted to do a craft show with you and include, well, but Sam's not writing at craft anymore. I was like, well, Sam's gonna be on the show before. You're welcome to join in. You know, Danner's writing something totally different from if you do decide that you want to come back ever and do your brewer and brewer, he's doing something totally different. But you know, Danner's writing doing the beer, and I love Danner. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Jeremy Danner.
No, he's awesome. We're going to do a beer. We keep planning to do a beer together.
Yeah, you need to.
Do it.
Absolutely.
He is one of my favorite personalities.
why don't we do a craft under my host collaboration? I'll send one of you a beer.
Perfect.
I'll send you my barrel, and you can make it into a beer, and then you can send the barrel back to make coffee, and then we'll just have the trifecta.
I think that's awesome. It's the Fermilab thing that Dave Weglars and Drew Fox have been talking about. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Send me a mailing address. I have a barrel for you.
Awesome. But Sammy, you're always welcome to come back on the show. You're always we love having you. I always feel bad because I don't ever open the invite to the other guys, but I just know Sam so well that Jerry is always welcome on. Adam, once you're done raising your kid in 18 years, you can come on. No, I'm kidding.
Parenting.
Aaron, if you ever want to come back on just to chat with us, you're fantastic. I would love for listeners to hear more about coffee and really just to have you on because you were so great.
Yeah.
Adam Spiegel.
Oh, thanks. I'd love to.
Oh, definitely. Please do. I'm not somebody who just says that. I would kind of just say thanks for joining us and don't.
Okay.
We would be looking at each other when I would say, please don't come back. Of course.
I'm honored.
Adam Spiegel, Sonoma County Distilling Company, Sonoma.
Yeah.
Yes. And of course, Sam Cruz of Against the Grain Brewing. You guys were fantastic. We ran over much longer than we planned to, but I would still talk to them for like another 30 minutes hour. You guys are so awesome.
Yeah, thank you guys.
And we'll talk to everybody soon. If anybody ever has any questions for these guys, you can send them in. I'll try to get them to answer it, or we'll get them to answer it the next time they're on. You have questions, Brian?
I have a ton. Yeah, we could go for hours.
Absolutely.
Do you want to, how about like your top two?
So many wrestling questions.
I want to geek out on the process of the barrel-aged coffee, and I want to talk about this cherry wood stuff. And we got...
Okay, how about your first? What's the most important question you want to ask?
Most important question is, how do you pick which coffee you go to, which barrel? How do you size those two up? So you're planning on barrel aging a coffee. You know, what's your thought process?
That's not really a quick two.
That's like, you know, let me get in your head for a minute. But.
it's carrying a lot of flavors. I mean, it's looking at the fermentation of the coffee, like how, where's the acidity, where's the sweetness, and like thinking about that, just hearing it just like you would like anything.
and saying like, oh, do we want to like, you know, have very similar flavors, like, you know, coffees that are just naturally, you know, super brown sugar, hazelnut, milk chocolate. Like, they work really, really well with bourbon barrels. You know, or you want to like do something completely different. Like we had an absinthe barrel that we used at one point, and that was really strange. And I didn't, you know, I guess I'm not even sure, but I don't know if absinthe is traditionally barrel aged. But we got a barrel with it. that was kind of weird, but
it was
by
accident.
Oh, no, we faked one. I mean, one time we dropped a whole bunch of chartreuse into a barrel just to see what happened, and then mixed it with coffee. That was really weird. It was awesome.
Oh, that was a very expensive day, too.
I know, we dropped chartreuse in a barrel.
Oh, we dropped it back out, filtered it, and drank it anyway. It ain't going away.
Well, you save your questions for him. We'll have him back. Yeah.
He got one last question.
Oh, wait, you ask your
question.
Ask your question.
Sam, I got a question for you. Citra ass down. Is Citra the only hop in that beer? Is that a single hop beer?
No way. No way. That's crazy. It's so expensive and crazy to do that. Citra is the finishing hop.
Okay.
So that's the only one you know of. Columbus and Centennial.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. Nice.
That's how we do.
It's such a good brewery.
That's liquid gold, buddy.
They were O-facing.
We were fighting over the last tablespoon.
Matter of fact, in Georgia,
Matt wanted my glass because my glass had more.
I don't know how that happened.
You guys, you're welcome back anytime. Listeners, if you want to learn more about Sonoma County Distilling Company, Adam wrote in our water issue, he wrote about the importance of water in distilling. Sam was a columnist with us for the first year of craft. He wrote Brewer on Brewer Action. And we will get Aaron back on to talk more about coffee in the future. You guys, thank you so much for joining us. You were so awesome. This was a fantastic show.
A lot of fun.
Thanks.
Yeah, really good stuff
everybody
to drink, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
Oh, and I guess I should say www.craftbyumh.com is how you can access the embed for the magazine, and then all the back issues are in there as well. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for supporting craft.
Yes.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much.
Have a great night.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, guys.
You guys were awesome. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you,
Adam. I'll talk to you guys very soon.
You know where I'm at.
I know where you're at.
All right, bye, y'all.
Bye, Adam.
It was real fun.
It was. It was a great show.
Yeah, that was good.
It was so much fun. I kept looking at it. I was like, what's going on? And I was like,
go back, repeat, trace the veins that you don't want to see, with your hands and your hair.